It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, the well-traveled Jesse Granger with The Athletic. With The Athletic, right?
Yes, sir.
Fuck that up?
Okay, no, that's good.
No, awesome. So already off to a great start. This is another episode in a week's time. So we are really sticking true to our word. We're promising weekly episodes. We're sort of mostly delivering on that. So
what's the meme that's going around Twitter? The look at us.
Yeah, it's the Paul Rudd. Like I
look at us.
I can't look believe at us. It.
Two weeks in a row.
Yeah, I didn't believe it. I wouldn't have believed it. So a lot has happened since our last podcast, and I guess the big bit of news, and again, it's been a while, but Valentin Zhukov apparently did more than just work hard in the summer.
Yeah, that story doesn't look the best after the news that came out.
So, well, I'm sorry, what story? Because I feel like you're alluding to something that people should check out on The Athletic if they are so inclined. You did a very detailed, very in-depth piece before the season started on Valentin Zhukov and his bid to become a full-time NHL player.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked... Well, actually, what prompted that story was me going to City National Arena multiple times throughout the summer when 90% of the players weren't in Vegas anymore to do a one-on-one. One of them was a one-on-one with Marchessault. One of them, I forgot who I was interviewing, but I was there a couple times, and both times, Zhukov was on the ice.
Sure.
And to me, if a guy is working his butt off all offseason, he deserves some credit for it. So I talked to players, talked to coaches. They all said the guy was in the gym, on the ice all off season long. And then they couldn't talk about how in great a shape he was. They couldn't talk enough about it. They said his physical tests were much better than last year. When they came in for their physicals, they said he was faster on the ice. I think Jonathan Marchessault said, what I would tell him is he doesn't know his own strength. And I think it's unfair to Valentin Zhukov, considering we don't know all the details, and we never will, because that's how the NHL is.
Right.
I think it's unfair to say, wow, all those gains are because he was taking steroids.
Sure.
I don't think that's fair to say. So I don't want to, like, that story may very well be, it may have been hard work, and maybe it was the same thing Nate Schmidt's claiming, where it was an accident. We don't know.
Well, here's the deal.
It's just unfortunate timing.
When it comes to performance-enhancing drugs, like, you can take them all you want to, but if you're not actually working toward getting an adaptive response from your body, it's not going to do anything for you.
Correct.
Like, I can take steroids, but if I don't go to the gym, I'm not going to look any different, or not, like, appreciably different, or I'm not going to perform any different. You have to start, like, with a body that is putting itself through some type of stress, and then you can start to see some benefits. But it's not to suggest that if he's taking performance-enhancing drugs or performance-enhancing substance, whatever you want to call it, that he's not also putting in work to reap the most benefits you could possibly reap from that.
Correct.
So,
but yeah, so it was
it doesn't discredit anything. I mean, it makes you look at it, I think, now from a different lens.
Of course.
But you have to kind of put yourself in the position of Valentin Zhukov for a minute. Last year, three different teams claimed twice on waivers, finally getting an actual opportunity to, like, go through the summer, get himself into shape, get an actual look in an NHL camp. You don't know how many opportunities you're going to get. Now, I'm not saying or suggesting, and like you said, Valentin has come out in his statement saying, I don't know how I tested positive for this. So it could be a misunderstanding. That's fine. But if you don't think that there are guys that are trying to gain every single advantage that they possibly can to become full-time NHL players, not just on this team, but all the other teams in the NHL, I think we're all mistaken.
Yeah, it's just crazy that the only two that have been popped in the last 3 years came from the same team.
So let's talk about that. Because my stance on the Golden Knights Insider Show, the day that we found out, the day after that we found out, my stance on every show that I've been on since then is pretty much the same. I don't care what you need to do or how you need to figure this out. It cannot happen again for the Golden Knights. They simply cannot get another suspension due to PEDs again. Because I don't care what the circumstances are. I don't care that it's different for Nate Schmidt and somehow different now for Valentin Zhukov. The fact of the matter is, twice in 3 years, twice essentially in a calendar year for this organization when it hasn't happened to anyone else. It cannot happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. If right now, it looks really bad for the Golden Knights. And any player who has a breakout season, maybe not locally fans, but national hockey fans, international hockey fans, all our friends up in Canada, as soon as a Golden Knights player has a breakout season, you know what the jokes are going to be.
Oh, sure.
Wow, I wonder why this guy is scoring all these goals. Took steroids. That's the joke. And right now, I think it's about... I don't want to try to put a percentage on it, but it's a percentage of the fans who think that way. And the reason it's only a percentage is because the Nate Schmidt situation was so sketchy, and like I think a lot of people really believed Nate Schmidt. But now that it's happened twice, all the people who were given the benefit of the doubt are now gone. If it happens a third time, something's going on.
Well, so you get the benefit of the doubt in the first instance simply because of the stance, I think, that the organization had, where they went to bat for their player. The second time it happens, we all saw the press release. We talked about the press release. We talked to George McPhee. There was no backing of the player whatsoever in this situation. Zero.
They said he knowingly took the substance.
So you almost don't get the benefit of the doubt the second time. If it happens a third time, no one's going to look at you as anything other than an organization that this is a problem.
Yeah.
This is a problem. And so I guess the question is, what can the Golden Knights do to ensure this doesn't happen again? We know that they provide players with the food, right? Like we've been to practice. We see like these guys don't really have to do very much of anything during the season. But in the off season, what can the Golden Knights do to ensure that players are sticking to the nutrition program? Players are sticking to the supplementation program. Like, because if you're a player, it's just a stupid idea to take anything or do anything that has not been issued to you by your team. Because if you get popped then, at least then you can say, it's you guys.
Yeah.
Whatever I took, it was at the recommendation of you. You gave it to me. So this is not on me. And that's what the players need to do. But I wonder how the Golden Knights figure out a way to make absolutely certain this does not happen again.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I don't know. I don't know if there's a way to do that because these guys are grown men that leave the city, leave the country during the off season, and there's not, I mean, what are you going to do? Lock them all in a room and feed them under a door?
You could try. I guess. I mean, I don't know. Like I know there's nothing practical that could be done, but yeah, like it's, the stakes are that high, I think, right now.
100%. A third test would absolutely tarnish the outside view of this organization.
That being said, where are you at with kind of the language throughout the players, the team, George McPhee, in terms of what they've been saying about the Valentin Zhukov situation? Because the language to me, I think, has been fascinating.
Yeah. It felt to me like they know something we don't know, is the vibe I got, because they were so adamant.
You talked to Zhukov's agent, right?
Yes.
What did you get from him?
So I had a phone call with Zhukov's agent the day that it all happened, and he said, we stand by Zhukov's statement. He didn't know how it got in his system. I asked him, the way we assume this happens, if he wasn't intentionally taking them, is he was taking a supplement that he thought was legal and it was tainted. And he said he was taking an over-the-counter supplement, were his words to me. So they believe... His camp believes it came from an over-the-counter supplement that he was taking. George McPhee said he had been taking that supplement for 4 years. So that makes you think. Now remember, we don't know if any of this is true we're never going to be allowed to see the actual evidence. But according to McPhee, he's been taking it for 4 years. He said it's an over-the-counter supplement. His agent also said something along the lines of, we have to figure out what's in these protein supplements. So it makes me think it's an over-the-counter protein supplement that Zikov believes that's where the test came from. If he's been taking that supplement for 4 years, if that's all true, then that means that either the company changed the ingredients, which from what I've been told is not that uncommon.
No, it happens all the time.
Or, and this is the risk when you take supplements that aren't supplied to you by the team, or you're getting this supplement that's coming from some warehouse, who the hell knows where.
Yep.
And in this warehouse, they may be producing supplements that are legal for NHL players and supplements that are illegal for NHL players. And just like if you have a peanut allergy and you're eating food that came out of a restaurant that serves peanuts, like there's always the chance for cross-contamination. Yeah. Now, this is all speculation based off very little information we've been given, but that seems to be what at least Zikov and his camp are believing this came from.
So, and it's fascinating to me because you would think that if he's been taking this protein supplement for 4 years, he would have had a positive test last season, and he didn't. So clearly something changed between the last time he was tested and this season, right?
Yeah.
I think you're right, 100%. They change those formulas almost every 3 months.
Or he was intentionally taking steroids, and this is just the answer. There's never been someone who got caught taking steroids and came out and was like, yep, been juicing up for years. It could be he was just intentionally taking them, and this is his excuse. Same thing for Nate Schmidt. I think a lot of people believe Nate Schmidt, but there is the chance that Nate Schmidt was just taking steroids, and that was his cover-up. We'll never know because the NHL will never let us know.
A couple of things. With Nate Schmidt, almost immediately, the amount found in his system was thrown out there.
By the Golden Knights.
By the Golden
and
Knights.
By him.
To explain why the Golden Knights believed Nate Schmidt at the time and still believe him to this day. That was never thrown out there with Valentin Zikov. So it would lead me to believe that the amount that was tested positive for is likely significantly higher than what was found with Nate Schmidt.
That's the only logical conclusion
that you can draw. But here's the part that I don't understand. And here's the part that I tend to not really understand in and of itself. Protein is protein is protein. It just is. What is Valentin Zikov gaining from taking a protein supplement that his team did not give him when they give you protein supplements that are approved by the team? There's no actual benefit to taking something that's just as innocuous as a protein supplement over the counter.
Yeah.
When your team supplies it to you.
Yeah. And then as far as the language the team used, clearly the team was not as supportive of Zikov. You could say throw him under the bus, whatever. The team was not as supportive of him as they were of Nate Schmidt. And there are multiple factors. One, it's the second test. So it looks, if the team comes out as supportive, they look like they're part of the problem.
Sure.
Two, he's not as good of a hockey player as Nate Schmidt, so it's easier to toss him aside because he doesn't impact your team as much as Nate Schmidt. And three, and I think this one has kind of gone undercovered and not talked about enough, when Nate Schmidt tested positive, he ran to his phone and called the Golden Knights and told them, hey, I just failed the test. I'm going to have a hearing. You guys need to know everything that's happening. He had them go to his hearing with him, all that. It's a long process. We don't know how long the process is, but we do know it takes a while from when you fail the test to when the NHL announces you're suspended. That's a long process. The Golden Knights didn't find out from Zikov until the day before the suspension. The night before. Meaning Zikov failed the test, knew he was informed by the NHL that he failed the test, and withheld that information from the Golden Knights, which McPhee was clearly pissed about, because when I asked McPhee, when did you find out? He was visibly frustrated when he said, we found out last night. We know this is a long process, but we seemed to be the last to know, was his response.
That was the one right there.
We seemed to be the last to know is George McPhee's best way, without sounding like an asshole, of saying, what the hell, Zikov? Why did we not know about this?
And we already had a precedent for this earlier on in the season with Austin Matthews, right? Like, we all assumed that the Toronto Maple Leafs knew what the hell was going on with the Auston Matthews situation that happened in the middle of summer. And Kyle Dubas has to go on and he does his press conference and flat out says, I found out yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, I can't understand being an athlete. I can't understand doing something stupid. Or if you're innocent, not calling up your organization, not calling up your GM and saying, look, this is what's going to happen. This is what, these are the facts of the situation. I need you guys to understand that I did nothing wrong. And therefore, here we go. Right.
Yeah. And like, if you're Zikov, how do you, especially if you're innocent, especially if you have no idea how that happened. And oh my God, this is like such a shock to me. Like I would run straight to George McPhee and be like, look, this happened.
Yeah. I don't get it. Honestly, I really don't. And you know, the fact that it's protein or the fact that, that's what we're talking about here makes little to no sense to me because you can take 75 protein powders from the team. Like they're going to give you what you need. I just think that there are some things that don't add up in this situation that lend you to give Valentin Zhukov the benefit of the doubt. I think the Golden Knights as an organization, because this is number two, are losing very quickly the ability to have the benefit of the doubt. And I think that lends itself a lot to the Golden Knights saying, Valentin did this. We're walking back this way. And it's him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the guy. You know what? This is an individual choice by one guy, and it's not a reflection of our team.
And that's what the players said. That's what Marchessault said. That's what Pacioretty said. Which is, to see players not stick up for a teammate is shocking.
So here's the thing that I... there was a game that night.
Yeah, Ottawa.
The Ottawa game. And we had Jonathan Marchessault as a pre-game interview. It was Dan Duva with Jonathan Marchessault. And Marchessault was obviously asked about the Valentin Zhukov situation and all that. And Marchessault said, obviously, we don't want, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the word cheating came up. We don't want cheating in the NHL. Like, if that doesn't give you an indication that there might be something more behind the scenes that the organization knows that puts the onus squarely on Valentin Zhukov, I don't know what more you need.
Well, the fact that the press release says Valentin Zhukov knowingly took an illegal substance, that if that part isn't true, which Zhukov is claiming it isn't true, that sounds like a lawsuit.
Sure.
So I don't see how that team could possibly put that language in that press release without knowing something. From a legal standpoint.
Sure, I get it. Where does Valentin Zhukov go from here?
I don't know, but I would be shocked if it's with the Golden Knights.
So, likely get...
He's
likely going to come back from his suspension. The Golden Knights will likely waive him.
Put him on unconditional waivers, meaning not waived to go to the Chicago Wolves. Unconditionally waived, meaning released from our organization. He no longer plays for any of our teams.
Would a team take a chance on him?
I don't know. It's when you're a player like Valentin Zhukov, who's a bubble NHL player, who's a very replaceable guy in the lineup. It's not the same as Nate Schmidt. And like you brought up Auston Matthews and like, yeah, Auston Matthews handled that about as poorly as he could.
The entire Auston Matthews situation is just stupid top to bottom.
Yeah, and the Leafs forgot about it the next day because he's Auston Matthews. Nate Schmidt, they signed him to a long-term extension while he was still suspended because he's the best defenseman on the team. For Zhukov, it's different because there are hundreds of people out there that we can replace you with as far as what you're like production in the NHL has been. So I don't know. I don't know. Like maybe he remains a Golden Knight at this point. I would be shocked if he was brought back. So we'll see.
I don't think Valentin Zhukov plays another game for the Golden Knights. And it's a tough spot, I think, for the player. It's certainly a tough spot for the organization. I'm sure with enough time, there's a team out there that might get desperate, might need him, might want him, whatever. But I mean, this is just one of those things where you look at the Golden Knights, you look at year one, and everything went right. Every story was positive. You build up all this goodwill. And now you're quite literally one more test away from being labeled that team.
Yes.
In this league. And that takes away almost everything that you built up.
Yeah, it can't happen again. You're 100% right on that one.
All right, so
let's talk some hockey.
let's do it. He hasn't skated yet, were the words today from Gerard Gallant about Malcolm Subban, who was originally listed as day-to-day. This today is actually 2 weeks from the date of his injury. The biggest thing that I find interesting in terms of Malcolm Subban is just simply how divisive he seems to be for this fan base, because there's a contingent of people that believe he's good enough to be a solid backup in this league, maybe something more with more playing time, but they understand he's inconsistent. They understand that he's still young and still trying to work the kinks out. And there are other people that just think he's abjectly terrible,
yeah,
that he's never going to be anything, and the Golden Knights need to move on from him, and that Oscar Dansk is better, that Garrett Sparks is better, and it'd be clear as day that they are better if they get an opportunity. Well, then there are people that think Malcolm Subban is unreliable as a backup, not because of his play on the ice, which they'll rip apart the minute that he gets on the ice, but he's unreliable because he's always injured. I think the second point has a little bit more merit than the first one. I think we all know Malcolm Subban is a capable player when he's in the lineup. However, injuries, are they concerning to you, considering the fact that I think this is what, his fifth or sixth time in 3 years missing more than a week of time because of an injury?
Especially because it's happening with the little amount of playing time he's getting. It would be concerning if Fleury was injured this often, playing 65 games a year. The fact that Subban's getting injured this often, playing 15 games a year, is not good.
No, not
good. It's not a good sign.
No.
The issue is, with injuries, you can believe, okay, Malcolm Subban, his body is just, some guys never get injured, they're Iron Men, they play forever. William Karlsson, the dude can't get hurt. He's been playing for 2.5 years, he's never missed a game.
Knock on the table.
Yeah. Superstition. Jinxes are for losers.
Okay. Anyways,
but there, and we see this case like all the time in the NHL. Like, there's tons of Iron Men who never get hurt. And then there are some people who just can't seem to stay healthy.
Nolan Patrick sneezes wrong and he gets hurt.
Yes. Perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
So you can believe that Subban is one of those guys who just can't stay healthy, or you can believe that each injury on its own is a freak accident, and eventually they'll stop happening and he'll be good. And I don't know which one it is. It's every time he gets hurt, it's a little more concerning. And I've been saying this for 2 years, it's been concerning. It's his injury history is concerning, especially for someone you eventually want to play 50 games a year.
So when it comes to Malcolm Subban, this is all being brought to a head because Oscar Dansk got to play in a game for the first time since the inaugural season and looked every bit the AHL goalie that we've been telling everybody that he is. And for some people, I think it's a lot harder to just admit that they're wrong on Oscar Dansk. So the easy target becomes, well, now we've got to rely on third and fourth tier goaltending, when we've been hearing for the last 2 years that Dansk would be better.
Yeah. I mean, the argument shifts.
It does. And that's the thing that I think is interesting, is that Malcolm Subban's getting blamed for a loss that he had zero part in terms of actually playing the game.
Yeah. I think Oscar Dansk, I think a lot of fans don't follow the AHL and that's perfectly fine. Like, I follow the AHL because it's my job. Sure. If I was, like, when I was a Colorado Avalanche fan, I didn't follow the Hershey Bears very often. I think that was their team back then when I was, like, younger.
Probably true.
I think it was the Hershey Bears. But to be honest, I probably couldn't name three players on that team back when I was a big Avalanche fan following. Like, I just didn't. Like, I didn't care. Like, I watched the NHL team. And for those fans that watch the NHL team and only the NHL team, Oscar Dansk is 3-0 and had a shutout. And they just refused to believe that that's not what he is. And even though he was playing not so well in the AHL for the last 2 years, and he came up and he was the same Oscar Dansk he's been in the AHL, which is not a great goaltender.
Sure.
Not a terrible goaltender. Oscar Dansk is not like you can put him in a game. Like, and I don't think if you played Oscar Dansk 3 games in a row, I don't think all 3 games are going to look like that Philly game where he gets torn up. He's going to have some good games. But he's not a number two goalie in the NHL.
No. And I made this argument on the post-game show, I believe after the Chicago game. The problem is that Marc-Andre Fleury is really, really good.
Yes.
Right? The problem is that you see Marc-Andre Fleury make this defense currently, right now, without Nate Schmidt, without their number one defenseman, make this defense look good. Because he's exceptional at what he does. He is the top of the top of the top.
And he currently. even like the littlest thing, like making a blocker save, there's an identical shot blocker high to Fleury, Subban, Dansk, Sparks, and Ferguson. All 5 make the save, but only Fleury puts that rebound into the corner so that there's not a dangerous, like small little things. And he does all of them. Like, he doesn't just do a small thing here or there. He does a small little thing every second he's on the ice, and it all adds up to being just a flawless goaltending performance nearly every time he's out there. Right. And then you see a non-Hall of Famer, and it's just, and like, they're just not as good. They're never gonna be that good.
Like, the worst NHL player is better than everybody else that plays hockey.
Yes.
In this country, in Canada, where the worst NHL player is better than you who light up your beer league. Like, period, end of story. But the level and degree of how good a player is between elite, really good, good, AHL, AHL backup, like, it's crazy, crazy different. And I think a lot of times when you watch Malcolm Subban play, a lot of the criticism comes from, well, he's not Marc-Andre Fleury. I have news for a lot of people. There's only one. Not many guys are Marc-Andre Fleury.
And when he retires, there won't be another one for the next 20, 30 years. So enjoy it while you have it, because I'm telling you right now, in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, when he's gone, it's there, the next goalie that steps in, it's not going to be Marc-Andre Fleury. It's going to be something drastically less, and it's going to be drastically less for a couple decades because those guys don't exist.
They don't grow on trees. If what he does night in, night out, every single time he comes to the rink was repeatable, easily repeatable, every single team would have a good NHL goalie, great NHL goalie. Like, there are many, many teams, San Jose, that don't have even league average goaltending.
Yeah. There's 10 teams in the league right now that are not happy with where they are goaltending-wise.
Shouldn't be. But the problem becomes measuring Malcolm against Marc-Andre Fleury when you should be measuring Malcolm against Malcolm. You've got to measure Malcolm against where he was when Dave Pryor took his first shot at him to where he is now. Are you seeing improvements in his game? And I know that this year it's really hard to even talk about it because he's only played 20 freaking minutes.
I know, and he was phenomenal in those 20 minutes.
Really good.
But it's such a small sample that, like, what are you going
to
do?
But the progression needs to be there. You need to take results out of it. And I know that that sounds ridiculous, but you need to pay attention to the processes he uses as a goaltender. How is he looking around screens? Is he continually getting beat in those situations?
I want to talk about that.
We will in a second. But, like, you have to challenge yourself to judge Malcolm Subban on different standards than you judge Marc-Andre Fleury. Because if you keep judging him against Fleury, you're never going to be happy with any backup that you have. Malcolm, Garrett Sparks, Oscar Dansk, Dylan Ferguson, you cannot measure those guys against a future Hall of Famer who has won 3 Stanley Cups, who has a number one overall pick as a goalie, which never happens.
And played as an 18-year-old.
And played as an 18-year-old in those ridiculous yellow pads.
The guy is going to finish top 3, top 5. He's definitely finishing top 5 in wins in the history of hockey.
Probably.
He has a good chance at finishing top 3. He's going to finish top. He's already top 20 in shutouts. He has a chance to get to top 10 in shutouts. We're talking about one of the 10 greatest goaltenders to ever play the game. No one's going to look like that.
And And the funny thing is, arguably getting better with age.
He's been statistically. Dave Pryor has improved his game drastically from Pittsburgh. And you mentioned the looking through screens with Subban. And I also think that because Fleury is so good, I think there are deficiencies in the defense for the Golden Knights that are invisible to us because Fleury's so good. And I asked John Merrill before, it was between Philly and Chicago. So it was before the Chicago game. It was right after they just got lit up by Philly. And I was like, are there things, I'm not even talking about making saves or not making saves. Are there other things that Fleury does that makes your life easier? For example, communication, telling a guy when a player is skating behind him, telling him where the pressure is coming on the forecheck, going behind the net and playing the puck, little things like that. And one of them is Marc-Andre Fleury's ability to see around screens is elite. Like, on another, like, even with other elite goalies, he's better than they are at seeing around screens. Watch one, it's hard to do when if you're watching on TV because the camera's not always on him, but like, if you're at a game, every once in a while, just watch Marc-Andre Fleury when there's traffic in front of the net. Watch the dipping and ducking and diving he's doing in order to keep his eye on the puck through guys' legs, around guys' shoulders. He's contorting his body in strange ways in order to see that puck while still remaining on balance and square to the puck. It's unbelievably hard to do. And he's so good at it that I think Golden Knights defensemen don't clear the crease as well as they should because it's a wasted effort because Fleury's going to see it anyways.
Yeah.
Then you see, and every time Subban plays, I'm always blaming the defense because I don't think it's Subban's fault. And maybe it's because they're not playing any worse in front of Subban. They're just playing the same way they have with Fleury. Subban can't see around the screens. Ask any person that's listening to this why they don't like Malcolm Subban as a goalie. I bet not seeing around screens is on the top of their list. Well, what happened when they put Oskar Dansk in there? He couldn't see around the screens either. That goal that Raffle didn't want the credit for.
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah.
That wasn't even that good of a screen. Dansk never saw the shot. And this is like a new theory that just after watching Dansk, I don't think Subban's bad at seeing around screens. I think
he's just not Marc-Andre Fleury.
He's just not Marc-Andre Fleury, and the Golden Knights defensemen maybe don't clean out the front of the crease as well as they should because they're so used to having him back there. And then you put these two back there, and they just cannot find the puck.
How do you change it? It's got to be a defensive effort in front, right? Like, you've got to adjust, maybe.
It's a combination of that, and Subban needs to get better at it, and Dansk needs to get better at it, but that's going to take time. That's why you have to be patient.
So here's where I'm at. We already know how good Marc-Andre Fleury is. We know how good he's going to be.
He's been the best goalie in the NHL by a mile.
Yeah, it hasn't been particularly
this
close.
Season.
He's been in a zone, in some kind of a zone. I think the screen thing is interesting because when you talk about Fleury and you watch him play, Jonathan Quick was very similar to me in terms of how he would move around. It wasn't always trying to look over the top of a screen.
It's almost
never. And that's the difference with Malcolm. Malcolm's always looking over the top.
That's the majority of goalies. And that's comfortable because you're not, when you lean to one side or the other, it gets you off your edges.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Marc-Andre Fleury's balance in doing that is so incredibly ridiculous because the only parts of his body that he's moving are his head and his shoulders. Everything else is staying square. Everything else is still on angle. And that isn't an easy thing to do. You want to know how he got to that level? Time.
He's been doing it for a decade and a half.
Games, experience.
Yes.
Tendencies, learning the tendencies of the guys that he's playing against. Like, do you think it's any coincidence that he was able to really, really understand and really get to where he needed to get against Pittsburgh? I don't. He knows those guys. He understands their tendencies from facing them every single day for as long as he did. And you don't get that good at something without getting the repetitions.
Yes.
And I'm not suggesting, by putting that out there, that Malcolm Subban is going to be Marc-Andre Fleury.
I think
we've spent the last 20 minutes right now saying he isn't. He's not going to be. It's not going to be particularly close either.
No.
But Malcolm today should be much worse than Malcolm 3, 4, 5 years from now, assuming A, health, and B, regular workload.
Yeah, that's the key, is you can't get all that experience if you're always on IR.
Sure, I understand.
That's, to me, that, like, and like, I know I'm the Subban apologist. I think he's awesome. To me, there's one concern with Subban. It's health, and it's a big concern. Other than that, if he can stay healthy, I think the guy's going to be a starting goalie in the NHL. But every time he gets hurt, I'm less and less sure that that's ever going to happen, because you can't get better without playing.
No, I completely agree with you. So that begs the question. He hasn't skated yet. We are 2 weeks away, or 2 weeks removed from the injury. Garrett Sparks was recalled. Garrett Sparks is with this team for the time being. The Golden Knights have 4 games in the next 10 days. So it's a bit spread out. The closest chance I think we see Garrett, or the best chance we get to seeing Garrett Sparks, is potentially on Sunday against Anaheim. What if he plays well? What if, and
I think he will.
Just hear me out. What if he plays well? What if Malcolm is a little bit closer to week than day to day? And Garrett Sparks gets an opportunity, and the Golden Knights actually try to get Marc-Andre Fleury into a natural rhythm. What then? What do you do then? Because Garrett Sparks could be a good goalie for some other teams. Malcolm Subban, while the stock right now is low because of the injuries, and because you've only seen 20 minutes of what he could be this year, we've talked about multiple times scoring depth with this team, and we've talked about defensive depth with this team. If Garrett Sparks has a strong showing, could the Golden Knights maybe parlay that into some type of extra depth somewhere in this lineup that needs it?
They could. I first off, I'll say I expect Sparks to look pretty good. I think I liked what I saw. I just got to see Sparks yesterday in Chicago.
Yeah.
Man, that road trip was such a blur. I keep forgetting that was just yesterday. So yesterday I was in Chicago watching the
You were working harder than
Wolves.
Nick Hague.
That guy, he had quite the turnaround too. But yeah, so I watched Sparks yesterday, and man, the Wolves got absolutely dominated by the Texas Stars. The final shots were 42-24. 42-24 were the final shots. They basically doubled them.
Yeah.
And yet the Wolves won 3-2 because Garrett Sparks was outstanding. And not, he didn't really make any like cross crease diving, sprawling saves. He was just square to the puck. He absorbed it. He didn't allow rebounds. They got 41 shots, well, 42 shots, whatever it was. I don't know if he allowed a rebound the whole game. He was sharp. He looked really good. And you look at his stats in the AHL this season. He's been very good on a team that is an absolute sieve on defense. They don't know what they're doing down there because they've got all these new pieces.
Here's the question I pose to you. Garrett Sparks has always been really good in the AHL. He was the best goalie in the league 2 years ago.
Won a Calder Cup.
Won a Calder Cup with the Toronto Marlies. Like, I don't think anyone's questioning whether or not he can be a good goaltender in the AHL. I think what people are wondering is, can that translate to the NHL? Can he continue to get better or be better at the NHL level? He's got to have a chance.
I hope we get to find out. I hope he gets one of these 4 games. And like you said, Anaheim, I think Anaheim would be great, because after that road trip, and remember, this isn't just the amount of games Fleury's playing. The amount of stress he's putting on his body, making all these crazy, ridiculous saves. Every time he does that, there's the chance that he could tweak something. There's a chance that he could overextend a muscle. There's like, I think a week off would be great for him. Even though it's early and he's not tired yet, like Marc-Andre Fleury isn't tired right now. The season just started. Even though he's not tired yet, I think a week off would be nice. And the way these games are spaced out, I believe if he takes Anaheim off, that's a full week without a game for Marc-Andre Fleury, which would be nice.
I'm very curious to see Garrett Sparks in game action. I would like to see Garrett Sparks behind the Golden Knights defense and their forwards, because I remember Garrett Sparks behind Toronto. And while I feel like defensively, at least from a system perspective, the Golden Knights are more responsible than the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
I'd like to believe that.
Well, and their forwards, maybe the defensemen on the Knights, but the forwards on the Knights are much more defensively responsible.
And I'm curious to see if that allows Garrett Sparks to have better numbers, to be more comfortable in net. And I'm really curious to see how he handles those situations where he's asked to look around players and asked to pick up release points through three or four bodies, and if he can do it at the NHL level, what that might mean for him in the future and how the Golden Knights might be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, if there's a hesitation on Sparks with me, it's that you watch Fleury and how many cross-crease saves has he made this season? An unbelievable amount. His lateral movement is, and I've asked him like three times if he worked on lateral movement during the offseason. He says no every time. He's lying to me.
I just think that's never been a weak point of his, though. Like, he's always been really good.
But they can't beat him cross-crease this season. They can't do it. Every one-timer, he's getting over there somehow. And
well, maybe his defense stopped allowing those passes.
Yes, exactly. But my point is, so Malcolm Subban, even those that don't like him, you'll admit, the best part of his game is his lateral movement. He gets across there maybe faster than Fleury does. If Garrett Sparks has a weak point to his game, that's it. It's the lateral movement. He's a big goalie. He is much, much, much bigger than Fleury and Subban. He's only like 6'3", but I'm 6'3", and I was standing next to him after the game in Chicago. He's bigger than I am. Like, he's a big goalie. And he's more of a positional goalie. He takes the angle. He doesn't get across the crease particularly fast. And I'm afraid that if they put Sparks in there and the other team gets three or four of those one-timers, it's three or four goals.
So it's degrees of death by a thousand paper cuts, really. Like, it's take your chance with Subban, who's got great lateral movement but can't see around the screens as well, or take your chance with Garrett Sparks, who might be able to see through screens a bit better than Malcolm but isn't going to get to those cross-crease passes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I was very impressed with Sparks. I noticed he's not nearly as fast getting across there. Like, it doesn't look like when Subban and Fleury explode across.
Right.
It doesn't look like that with him because he's huge.
Just be aware of how good Marc-Andre Fleury is.
Yes.
You're getting spoiled.
Man, those numbers on the goals saved above average are mind-blowing.
What are they right now? Do you have it handy or no?
No, not handy, but I just know that his saves on the penalty kill, first off, the Golden Knights' penalty kill has been the best in the NHL, and it's has pretty much nothing to do with any player on that team except Marc-Andre Fleury. That's how unbelievable. Let me see if I can find out the saves on the penalty kill. And this was in Pittsburgh that I wrote the story, so it's been a few games since then, but it's just...
So while you're looking that up, I want to talk about expected goals.
Here we go. 64 saves on the penalty kill.
Yep.
The next closest goalie was Calgary's David Rittich with 36. 64. The second most in the entire NHL only made 36.
That's insane.
Jesus Christ.
So because people really love statistics.
Well, especially the real deep analytic ones.
Expected goals. William Karlsson. You just wrote a piece about how the goals are coming. The goals are coming. And while you can look at trends, and we want to look at trends because, you know, we watch the games, we see the players, we see the chances, we see that they're not converting. We also understand that there are numerous factors as to why that's not happening. But the old adage in hockey is, if you're getting the chances, eventually they're going to go. Eventually you're going to score some goals. And now we've got numbers to back that up, or at least suggest that it's going to break in the right direction. What if it doesn't?
Then it means...
Or do you think it's an impossibility?
I wouldn't say an impossibility. It's highly, highly, highly unlikely that William Karlsson continues playing. Now, there's the... I'm not saying he couldn't stop getting the chances.
Sure.
Say he just starts not playing well and doesn't get the chances, then the goals won't be here. What I'm saying is, if he continues playing the way he has for the first 11 games, he's going to score 30 goals. If he continues getting the same amount of chances he is right now, there's no way.
He's only going to have one goal in 11
games. He's not going to score goals because... So expected goals is a stat that people don't like because it's complex. It's not tangible. You can't. The response to every story I write with expected goals is, about actual goals?
Yeah. How about the actual goals?
The issue is actual goals aren't a very good predictor for future goals. Example one, Brandon Peary. Example two, James Neal. We'll see. Is James Neal going to continue scoring 9 goals in 9 games? I highly, highly, highly doubt it. Why? Because he's only had 0.7 expected goals this season and has 9.
No, man, he's the real deal. Like,
you
don't know. You don't know what you're talking about. So
expect,
analytics.
So expected goals are basically calculated off of amount of shots. First off, also quality of shots. So where the shot's taken on the ice, whether it's off of a rebound or not, whether the player is pressured on the shot, whether it's on his offhand or not. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into this, and it's been proven from people way smarter than me. I'm not even going to pretend to know the math. All I know is people that are smarter than me tell me that there's no stat in the world that is a better predictor of future goals than expected goals. And William Karlsson has had better expected goals numbers than any player in the entire NHL.
I feel like in the case of James Neal, there needs to be a Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl multiplier.
Yeah.
And there's also got to be like an exponential multiplier for not having to play for Bill Peters.
That helps. Like, all of those things help.
I think all of that explains James Neal's 9 goals on a 0.7 expected goals percentage. Okay, so I think we've hit on everything. We're really not going to touch the third line too much today. Everyone's talked about the third line. I think it's been pretty much well established that we think Cody Glass should center the third line, that we think Alex Tuch will make that line a bit better. But the reality of the situation is this, and we saw it on this last road trip. If Mark Stone can't help Cody Eakin and Brandon Peary,
nobody can.
What is? Who is? When is it going to happen? Like, Mark Stone's the fixer. Mark Stone fixed an entire team in Ottawa. If he can't make it work with those two players...
They didn't get a shot attempt in an entire game.
How?
Is that even possible?
The tweet from the Philly game that I loved the most, and I don't remember who it was on Twitter, but it was somebody that covers the Flyers. The tweet was just a picture of Mark Stone on the ice against and Corsi for and against. Chris Stewart had 8 Corsi events. Mark Stone had 0.
Yeah, that's like an unbelievable
that
game.
Corsi doesn't exist anymore in my world.
By the way, Mark Stone's still got a point in that game.
I know.
To keep his, like, I think he's like 10 in a row now.
You know, and it's 11 in a row. It's really funny because all the things that we said about Marc-Andre Fleury apply to Mark Stone.
He's amazing.
Like, Mark Stone is on a level all onto himself, and I think it's starting to present maybe some unfair situations and unfair criticisms on other players that up until this point, you thought, oh man, you know, they're awesome. They're really, really good. There is a distinct difference between superstar, star, really good. Like, those are distinct differences, and it's rare when you get to see that stuff day in and day out, for sure. So let's go to the mailbag. Mike St. Germain, since England has difficulty keeping up with faster, younger forwards, on Nate's return, should Vegas play Derek in home games only, since they will have the last change and can better control matchups?
Gerard Gallant isn't a super big line matcher, so I don't know how much that's going to help, considering Gallant really doesn't use the last change to match lines a ton. He does to a point, but like not as much as some coaches do. I think the best games for Derek England to play are none of them once they get healthy. Right now, I have no problem with Derek England in the lineup. Like, what are you going to do? I'd like to see Coughlin maybe given a try, but to be honest, with Nate Schmidt out, I don't hate Derek England being in the lineup because they're stuck in a bad spot. But when Nate Schmidt returns, I think the three right defensemen should be Nate Schmidt, Shea Theodore, Nick Holden.
Would you break up Merrill and Holden?
Yes.
You would?
If I have to.
Well,
I mean,
no one's telling you have to.
Oh, I thought you meant like to make it work to get England. I'd rather keep them together.
Would you keep them together?
I'd rather keep them together.
Incredibly consistent. They've been really good.
I'd rather keep them together.
So who do you play with Schmidt? You go McNabb-Schmidt?
McNabb-Schmidt, Holden, Merrill.
Bischoff-Theodore.
I like that.
Okay, all right.
I don't mind that. Or Haig-Theodore. I don't think that's terrible. Especially if it's Haig-Theodore. Especially if you can count on McNabb-Schmidt and you can count on Holden-Merrill. They're solid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can put Haig Theodore or Bischoff Theodore in specialty situations, and I think it really lets Theodore. Theodore hasn't produced much offensively. We haven't seen those plays from him where he's dangling guys, where he's making plays, and that's because he is 100% working on that defensive end.
What did we say through 20 games last year with Colin Miller?
Yes.
What did we say? It is Colin Miller 2.0. Shea Theodore, we all expected to take that next step up on the offensive side of the puck because, hey, he was going to be in a better situation. He was primed for a breakout. And then all of a sudden, he's got to play Johnny shutdown defenseman. And he's not producing offensively because he's that guy now.
He's too worried about defense, and that's not his game. And I do think that while having Shea Theodore on a third pairing sounds ridiculous because he's like the highest paid defenseman on the team and he's so dynamic, but I think maybe don't think of it as a third pairing. Think of it as let's let Shea Theodore make offensive plays because the Golden Knights need scoring from something other than their top six.
Yep.
And if you're not going to get it from the third line and you're not going to get it from the fourth line, it needs to come from Shea Theodore. And I think putting him in situations where he doesn't have to be as reliable defensively and letting him show those talents, that the reason Shea Theodore is a good NHL player is his offensive instincts. Let those shine.
Every single offensive zone start, Shea Theodore's on the ice. Every single one.
I agree.
Period. Play him 2 minutes on the power play. I really don't care.
Yeah, well, he has been playing 2 minutes on the power play.
If you're worried about his ice time, that's how you get it up.
Yeah.
Period. And I like the responsibility of Bischoff Theodore. I think that would allow Shea to be a little bit more unshackled, just go out there and do it so he's not too worried about foot speed coming back the other way and all that. But I think that works a lot. I think it works better for sure. I'm still holding out hope for Pietrangelo, but hey, whatever.
By the way, Nate Schmidt has skated on his own. Update from Gerard Gallant. Nate Schmidt and Alex Tuch both have been skating on their own. That's a great sign. Usually when they start skating on their own, it's a couple more days and they'll be skating with the team. So they're probably not playing tomorrow, but soon for those two.
Jake O'Hara. Does Tuch fix the depth scoring when he comes back? Does he automatically go to third line with Glass and Eakin, or will they shuffle the lines a bit? It seemed like Patches and Glass had some chemistry together. I think that it's probably going to be Alex Tuch on the third line with Glass and Eakin. I would love to see everything shift to the left. So that means Cody Eakin plays the left wing, Cody Glass plays center, and then you've got Alex Tuch on the right side because I think your center is going to dictate what you do as a line, and Cody Glass needs to dictate what that line does.
I agree.
For any production.
I agree with
that's
all that.
That's what needs to happen. So that's about it. let's see. Christopher Boyd, how can VGK improve production from the third line, bottom six? Do we just have to wait until Tuch comes back? Best food Jesse ate on the road trip, was it all Chicago deep dish pizzas or what? So we already answered the first one. Go ahead, answer the food question.
I had some good food on this trip. I did have Chicago deep dish. The first time I went to Chicago last year, I went to S. Checker, which is a place downtown owned by the uncle of the Zamboni driver for the Golden Knights. So I got there. That food was awesome. This time I didn't get a chance to go there. I just went to Giordano's, which is like the original place. It was awesome, as always. Also, in Pittsburgh, I got to go to Permanti Brothers. Yeah. First time I'd ever been there. It was very unique. It was good. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't like the greatest thing I've ever eaten. It was super unique. So for those that don't know, it's a sandwich place. I ordered a cheeseburger, but it's a cheeseburger with a giant handful of coleslaw and a giant handful of French fries on the actual burger. So it's a freaking mess. I was dipping it in hot sauce. It was delicious. So it was very good. Very good. But not the greatest thing. Like, I don't know if I'll go back, but I'm glad I went there. It's a Pittsburgh thing. It's unique. I'm glad I went and ate there. But I'll say the deep dish pizza was better.
At Party Purdue, scoring has been at a premium lately. If the floodgates never open, are we good enough to win these close games regularly? My short answer is yes. Quite simply because Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yep.
And you've
That's
got
the answer.
Solid defensive forwards. That's pretty much it.
I think the Golden Knights are going to score a lot of goals this year, but if they have to win games 2-1, they can. They absolutely can, because In 2-1 scoring games, that usually means there's a limited number of high-danger chances. And if each team gets a limited number of high-danger chances, you usually feel confident that Fleury's going to stop more than the other goalie.
Patrick Harrington. Pre-game ritual, favorite place to host the radio show. Who are you most hyped about in our prospect pool that isn't currently playing in the AHL? Halloween costume idea for the game. There's a lot there.
That is a lot.
Pre-game ritual, when I was a kid, when I was younger, when I played hockey regularly, I would need to put on a fake temporary tattoo.
Oh, yeah, I remember
like,
this.
I literally could not play this without it. And like, there was one set of games. It was a tournament down in San Diego, and I forgot to pack the tattoos. I completely forgot. So we get down to the arena about a couple hours early, and I go and I look through my bag, and I'm like, oh, my God, they're not there. So we went to, I don't know, like 75 different Walgreens, it seemed like, to find temporary tattoos. And, like, it worked, man. Like, I played really well. But, yeah, if I didn't have a tattoo, I sucked. That was horrible. Clearly, that was the reason.
Nice.
You?
I'm about as anti-routine, anti-superstition as you can possibly find. The only thing I, like, so when I, like, I'll go to the roller rink to play in my beer league games. And what I like to do is I like to get there early enough to watch a little bit of the game before mine. And I'll stand against the glass or stand on the bench. If I know the guys that are playing, I'll stand on the bench with them. And I just like watching the puck. And when I say watching the puck, like trying to find the details of the sticker on the puck while the game is going on, because I feel like it just sharpens my eyes. It kind of gets me into the game mode. But like, other than that, I don't have to put one skate on first or anything like that.
If you did, I'd go left to right.
Left to right is always better.
The Halloween costume idea for the game, I'm going to go with Recyclops. I would dress up as Recyclops for the game.
An office reference? Yes, that's good.
100%. Okay. Alex G, what etiquette do you have to display in the press box during the game?
Be professional. I don't know. Pass on that one.
I think it's all common sense, right?
Yeah.
That's all I got. I got nothing else.
Yeah, I mean,
left to right. Subban question. Okay. Lovejoy at, well, I'm not going to read the handle. So with the infatuation with Petrangelo aside, why not a deadline look at someone like Jason Zucker? 5.5 per year and signed through 2023. He would have to accept it with a modified no trade clause, but still, he is from the area too. Because if Gerard Gallant doesn't care about scoring on the third line, I think the best place for this team to improve is with defense. And I don't care if it's a rental or if it's a guy under contract, it's Stanley Cup or bust. So I think, when you look at those two players, Petrangelo versus Zucker, and I'm not saying either one is going to happen, but what I'm saying is if you had a chance for either one of those two guys, which guy makes you that much better? Which guy gets you to the Stanley Cup final and gets you to the Stanley Cup to win it all? To me, it's Petrangelo over Zucker.
It's defense. And also, I'll add, you're taking on that contract. The Golden Knights already have an inordinate percentage of their salary cap dedicated towards the forwards. If you look at, and like they have charts out there, I can't even think of the site that has it now, but there are charts out there that have what teams are spending on forwards, what teams are spending on defense, and what teams are spending on goalies. And the Golden Knights ratio to what they spend on their forwards to what they spend on their defense is way out of whack. Like, it is really disproportionate. And adding Jason Zucker's contract that goes through 2023 just makes it even worse, and you're going to lose more players in the offseason. Like, their cap space, it's just, I just don't think that works.
At some dude 88, Ryan, what's a back check?
We went over that last time.
No, we went over forecheck. This is different.
Oh, shit. It's like forechecking, but in the defensive zone.
You can also back check well in the neutral zone.
Yeah,
you can back checking
in the forward zone if they get past you. Yeah. If they get past you, you can back check in the offensive zone.
It is the act of skating really, really, really hard when you're trailing play to break up plays that may happen in the offensive zone that can result in goals scored against.
Good explanation.
All right. Sometimes. Sir Stoffington said, give us a really obscure hockey fact that sounds like a complete lie, but is completely true. The only place that my mind went to with this is Gordie Howe hat tricks. And specifically, the fact that Gordie Howe did not have very many Gordie Howe hat tricks in his career. He had a lot of goals and fights. He had a lot of assists and fights. But he didn't have too many games in which he had a goal, a fight, and an assist. I don't remember the exact number. I didn't look it up. I'd have to look it up. You might be looking it up.
No, I'm not.
But it is, I want to say two. I think in his entire career, Gordie Howe had two Gordie Howe hat tricks. He's not even the leader all time of Gordie Howe hat tricks.
Wow. See, that is a surprising stat, that Gordie Howe isn't the all-time leader in Gordie Howe hat tricks. Come on.
So, yeah, that I guess that could have been.
For me, it would be, like, we talked about, I think it was the Insider show when you had Mr. Goalie Glenn Hall on. I was just trying to look up how many games he played in a row. I couldn't find it. He played like a trillion games in a row. And, like, we were just talking about Subban and, like, goalie dependability with health. This dude played, like 20 seasons in a row, playing every game all season without a mask.
Yes, yeah, no, it was...
and never missed a game.
It was crazy. Bartolo Colon, assuming there are no major injuries at the deadline, who are some realistic targets that would fit under the cap?
Ooh, I'd have to do some more research for that.
I'd have to, too, but I'm not jumping off this Alex Pietrangelo bandwagon, man. I'm, like, all in on it. I don't think it's going to happen, like, realistically.
Well, the Blues have to suck for it to happen, because if the Blues are good, why would they trade him?
Why don't they have him under contract?
Well, but even
get him under contract.
But even if the Blues aren't going to sign him, if they're going to lose him, they could use him as their rental.
Sure, I get that.
If they're good.
I am really hoping that the Blues are bad.
That would be if the Blues are bad, then I could see them. For me, it's like, I think it's going to be a defenseman. I need to look, but I think it's going to be someone cheaper in the like $2 to $3 million range. Someone that's fast that can move pucks. I have to do a little more. I don't really care. Just give me someone good.
Anybody to take five out of the lineup?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we are 10 games, this is Vegas Misfits. Now that we are 10 games in, who do you rather, Peary or Gusev?
Gusev. Well, you know what, though? Because when you count their salary, Gusev still. Gusev is the answer. Peary's been bad.
Let me see. Buell sells LV. Is Will Carrier the most improved Knight so far this season?
If you don't count Marc-Andre Fleury, because his, like, last year he was good, he wasn't bad, but, like, his stats compared, like, he's by far the most improved. But let's see, who else? Nick Holden, I would say, is above Carrier. Nick Holden is probably my best improved skater.
I'm going Nick Holden, quite simply because I think he's been sensational early on for the Golden Knights, and that is not something I saw coming at all.
Yeah, me neither.
So
I thought they should have waived him in preseason. That would have been bad.
Honestly, I think that, like, Will Carrier's been good when healthy for two seasons now. He just hasn't been given much of an opportunity because he's playing, well, we know who he's playing with. So,
yeah.
Vince Rampa.
Oh, wonderful.
Do you guys really know hockey?
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I'd like to think we're okay at what we do.
Hopefully.
That hockey dude, is Gallant too committed to his guys? Eakin has been given so many chances, even playing with Stone when he hasn't earned it. Why hasn't Waugh been given a game yet? Peary has done a total of zero, but isn't being taken out of the lineup.
I think Gallant is a little too loyal to his guys, but I'm not here to question that, because when he won Jack Adams and you asked every player on that team and every player on other teams, by the way, The Athletic, we did the anonymous poll last year, that not just Golden Knights players, but players in the NHL want to play for Gerard Gallant. And the reasoning is his loyalty to his players. So if every player in the NHL thinks his loyalty is a good thing, I'm not going to be the one to say it's a bad thing.
Last one. We're going to finish on this one. At Nevada Dad, or Cowboy Jimmy Buckets, as he's been previously known, when will we trade Subban? And my argument in going back and forth was, I'm not opposed to it, but why would you do it now?
You're getting nothing right now.
You're not going to get anything in return. Like, so to me, it would make sense if that's the angle that you're trying to go with. And if Garrett Sparks, again, shows that he's capable of playing in the NHL full time and the Golden Knights see an opportunity there, then give Malcolm an opportunity to play himself into more value. And at that point, go out there and find a third line left winger that can score.
Yeah, goalies are valuable.
That's all I got.
Cool.
Anything to add? No?
I don't think so.
All right, so that's going to do it for us this week. We will be back with you next week. There's not as many games, so hopefully we'll still have some stuff to talk about, I'm sure. You know,
should be plenty. This Colorado game is going to be fun.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be great. I'm bummed Mikko Rantanen is not playing in the game. I'll give you that right now. Like, I know it makes it a bit better for the Golden Knights, but I don't care. Selfishly, I want to see the guy play.
I want all the best players in the NHL to be playing every night.
How good has Sidney Crosby been this year?
Phenomenal. He is carrying that team. Man, talk about putting a team on your back. Like, all the injuries they've had. I was in Pittsburgh, and I was talking to Josh Yohe, our Pittsburgh writer, and he was telling me that I think $22 million on the IR right now for Pittsburgh.
And it's great, too, because you're just like, you're sitting there, you're like, oh, man, because you tweeted out, if Crosby's not on the ice, the Penguins are doing
nothing. It's a disaster.
Yeah, and it's the same argument for Connor McDavid, although at least Connor McDavid has Leon Draisaitl to lean on. And, well, James Neal, I guess. But
Crosby's been phenomenal.
Like, he's got Jake Gensel, who's already bad.
He's like, so good. Crosby's so good. Yeah. Defensively and offensively. Like, he's just awesome.
Had Crosby not gotten hurt early on in his career, had he not lost a year and a half, essentially, to concussions, could he have hit 2,000 points?
Probably.
I think yes.
Yeah.
I think undoubtedly yes.
Probably, yeah.
I think he's probably going to end somewhere close to 1,800.
He's awesome. I mean, he's like, it's hard to say like best players of all time because like if you go best players of all time and look at the top 10, like probably most of them I didn't get to watch play. So it's hard for me. But since I've been alive watching hockey, Sidney Crosby's one of the best players I've ever watched play hockey. He's freaking amazing.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been super consistent in his entire career. And I think that's kind of the big thing, especially in this era. Last big picture question, Alex Ovechkin, can he play long enough to break Gretzky's goal scoring record?
I don't think he will.
Can he, though?
He could, yeah,
sure. Plays till 45, he's Jaromir Jagr 2.0?
Yeah, he'd have to keep scoring, though. Like, Jagr kind of tailed off there at the end, but
I think Alex Ovechkin can play until he's like 65 and only score like 3 or 4 goals a season to make it happen.
The shift starts, the left winger, or the center, literally grabs him and skates him over to the circle,
yeah,
and then just drops him off there, and they're like, all right, we'll be back in a minute.
Just put him in the circle. Don't even ask him to skate backwards. Like, once the puck comes out of the zone, use all the energy you have to just get to the blue line. If they get back into the zone, you're fine. It'll be good. All right, Jesse, where can people find your stuff?
JesseGranger_ on Twitter, theathletic.com. You can always subscribe on there, 40% off. Theathletic.com/Granger is the address to go to get that 40% off discount. I don't have anything that I want to tease right now. I'm working on a few things that will be really good coming up in the next week or so.
I'm Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. You can catch me Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish. You can also find me every single Golden Knights game with the pregame, intermission, and postgame show, also with Frank Harnish on Fox Sports. We will see you next week. Thank you very much. They muted me? That's one.
Cowboy. Not ranking bots.
Cowboy Jimmy Buckets.
Yeah, it's our
back
buddy.
Back in business.
Yeah, with a new Twitter account.
Yeah.